As an emotional eater, overeating that is accompanied by guilt and shame is a regular occurrence. But have you considered yourself a binge eater? And if you have, how do you start to address both the binging and the emotional eating? This week's podcast is special because I'll be interviewing psychotherapist Katie Gillis, and we will be discussing the link between childhood trauma and emotional eating and binge eating. If binge eating is an issue for you, then you don't want to miss this podcast episode. Want to lose weight but struggle to stay committed to a meal plan because you constantly feel hungry? Does food provide you with comfort when you are bored, angry, lonely, or sad? If so, you are in the right place. My name is Kristen Jones, and I'm a life coach specializing in emotional eating and weight loss, and I'm also a lifelong emotional eater. I want to provide you with information, motivation, and support so you too can learn to manage your issues with food and develop a healthy relationship with yourself. Welcome to the Breakthrough Emotional Eating Podcast. Hi, and welcome to the Breakthrough Emotional Eating Podcast. My name is Kristen Jones, and thank you so much for joining us this week. Now, I say us this week because usually y'all just get me, but this week, and I talk about all the time how I so enjoy having guests on the podcast that can benefit not only to the people in the Breakthrough Emotional Eating community on Facebook, which if you're listening to this and you are not a member, why not? Why are you not a member? You need to come and join us. www.facebook.com/groups/food breakthrough and come and be a part of our community. So supportive. All things emotional eating and action steps, things that you can do, steps that you can take to start to address your emotional eating. We don't just sit around and talk about it. We do things. So if you are an emotional eater, if you have weight to lose, if you don't have weight to lose and you just want to change your relationship with food, you want to come join us. So please come and join us. But we are live right now in the Breakthrough Emotional Eating community. We do our podcast live every Wednesday. And sometimes you just get me, but lately I have been lonely. And so I've wanted to have people here with me. And so today we have such a special guest, y'all. I'm so excited. Should I call you Dr. Dr. Katie?
No. Oh, no, not yet. Someday. Katie.
Okay. So yeah. Katie Gillis is a psychotherapist and an author and all things just really cool. She's a consultant as well. And she specializes in helping, do you deal with both women and men?
Yeah, I deal with all genders. I work with everyone. Yeah.
Everyone. Okay. So it talks about, she works with survivors of relationship and family trauma. So she helps them address issues from relationship and family trauma. And she's an author, y'all. She has one book, Invisible Bruises, which I love that title. It's amazing. That was released in 2021. And her second book, which is going to be released this month in February, is It's Not High Conflict, It's Post-Separation Abuse. And she also has a third book. She's busy, y'all. She's busy. Yes. She has a third book coming in the summer of 2023 on healing from family trauma. And I think we all can relate to that. So that's wonderful. I was just giving her a hard time and I was telling everyone in the group, she writes for Psychology Today, which is like my go-to place. So I just think it's amazing. I'm so happy that she does that. And she's been all over. She is a lecturer. Like I say, she's a consultant and she is honoring us with her presence here on the show. So I'm so excited. So Katie, thank you so much for joining us. And oh, I forgot to tell y'all, I thought she was Canadian, but no, she is from the United States. She is, I don't know why I got the Canadian vibe, but because she's so nice. That's why.
That's all really funny.
All my Canadians out there, you know, I love you. You know, I love those Canadians. But no, she's from Maine and she is now currently close to Canada. That's probably why I was confused. And she's living in New Orleans. And so Katie, please, welcome to the show. I'm so happy that you're
here. Thank you so much for having me. Thank you.
Absolutely. So if you wouldn't mind just kind of telling the audience and the folks who are listening in the Breakthrough Emotional Eating community, kind of how you found yourself, why you became a psychotherapist, and kind of how you selected, or it was selected for you, the topic that you cover and what your focus is. And I would love for you to share a little bit about how, like, we connected and then how we came to the decision to have this podcast and really go from there.
Absolutely. So I think like many therapists, I went into this field, you know, probably subconsciously to try to, you know, heal my own wounds, you know, when I started, 15, 20 years ago. And, so I went into therapy and I found that I really gravitated towards people who had family trauma. And I know that's a really broad, like, word or phrase. Like, people are like, what does that mean? It's everything from, like, a dysfunctional family to things where abuse is going on. So anything that is like a really traumatic, chaotic environment. And when I say family, I mean wherever you were raised. So some people were raised in a group home, foster home, if you were raised by two dads, two uncles, grandparents, whatever, whoever like your formative years were shaped with. And I found that I really gravitated towards people, or they gravitated towards me, definitely. I connected with them on, with those types of struggles. And so it kind of became my focus area. It's not like I went into the field and I was like, oh, I want to do this. Some therapists do, but I found that I was like, oh, you know, this is something I really can connect with and I really understand it. You know, of course, I absolutely have my own personal history with that. And so I went into that, and then I found that many of my clients had like a specific, you know, personality traits or specific behaviors, like based on their trauma history and things like that. And so some of them being like overeating, emotional eating, things like that. And so that's really kind of where I went with that. And I forgot the second question you asked me.
Oh, how we connected.
Okay.
How we decided to say, yeah.
So your book, because of what I do, a lot of books will get recommended to me. Your book was recommended to me. I think it was on Amazon. And yeah. And I was like, all right, you know, this is great. And so I read it, and I think I sat down and read it in like a day. And, so I read it, and then, you know, I've recommended it to a couple of clients. And so I said, you know, let me just reach out to her. And cause as an author, I've always loved it when people reach out to me and they say they've read my book, but yet it's funny because as a reader, I'm always bashful of doing that. I'm always like, oh, they're not going to want to hear from me. But I said, you know, let me just reach out and just say, thank you for writing. Thank you for what you did and for writing and for putting yourself out there to help other people. And so then, you know, here we are, and I'm grateful for this opportunity. I think it's great.
Absolutely. No, and you're right. It's so y'all are listening. If you read somebody's book, send them a DM, that's what Katie did. Just send them a DM and just say, hey, thanks for doing that. Cause it does, it makes a huge, it was really amazing. And then it prompted me then to write her back and say, hey, I think I'd love to have you on my podcast. And so that's how it's something that is that binging and the connection. And that was one of the things that you had mentioned, is that you appreciated how I included the idea of childhood trauma being impactful in adult decisions that we make. And so I would love to kind of start off the conversation with how you, in your practice or in your experience with people, how are you seeing what is happening with that connection between childhood trauma or even, you know, any kind of trauma in life and the emotional eating, and how do those two things kind of play together?
Well, trauma, because of what it does to our brain, it really imprints our brain, you know, whatever it is that happened, and trauma, and I know a lot of these words I use are very broad and very vague. But trauma, I mean, it could be anything that you consider, you know, scary, that your brain has coded as being traumatic. It's not like there's, you know, you have to meet 7 of the 9 criteria or whatever. It's mm-hmm. whatever it is that you consider. For a lot of people, it's abuse or dysfunction, chaotic environments, people who've had to, you know, up and leave their homes, like things like that. So it's not always abuse or things like that. So I find that what ends up happening is people who have that trauma, they have a lot of times things like emptiness. They have a lot of times things like a need to self-soothe. When we have trauma, we have a lot of anxiety. We have different, you know, like different sensations in our body, and we can't self-regulate, or we struggle to self-regulate. And so eating, because it's something that's so available for many of us, of course, there are many of us that it's not, but because it's something that's available for people, no matter the age. And what I mean by that is not like alcohol, where you have to be mm-hmm. 21 in the United States, you know, or things like that. Food is going to be the thing that it's there. So children, when they're learning to self-regulate, I find that children will, let me grab the chips or the Skittles, because mm-hmm. you know, maybe mom and dad or grandpa and grammy are upset, and, you know, they're creating a really toxic and really chaotic environment, and the kid doesn't know how to self-soothe. And so, but they don't have the knowledge that we have of adults saying, you know, this is situational, this is not my fault, let me compartmentalize this. Children mm-hmm. only know my heart is racing and my breath is getting shallow and I feel uncomfortable in my body and I don't know what to do. So I find that a lot of kids will then say, okay, well, let me get the chips, or it tends to be crunchy stuff, but not always. I mean, people mm-hmm. of course can binge on emotionally eat on anything, but it tends to be stuff that's crunchy because chewing is very regulating. And I find mm-hmm. that with, you know, especially with young people, they're learning to regulate. They're trying to learn to regulate, and they're trying to self-regulate. And so the chewing is very, very calming. It's like soothing. It's because it's rhythmic.
Yeah.
And so it's like the, you know, and then the feeling of fullness. When we grow up with trauma, trauma manifests as emptiness. Maybe it manifests as loneliness, despair, feeling left out. And that's, you know, think of your body like being empty. Like when I work with kids, I talk about like your body is empty. There's a hole in your body. So the food, you're filling that hole. Now, as adults, we know, okay, we're not filling the emptiness with the food. We know that logically. Children, they don't understand that it's loneliness. They just know, I feel empty. That must be hunger. And so a lot of times I'll see them kind of develop that coping skill from that.
Yeah, as you were talking about just the soothing,
mm-hmm.
that was totally me. That was totally
me.
Because I grew up in an environment that there was a lot of eggshells to walk on.
Yes.
And I always felt responsible for, because I always was getting in trouble. And so mm-hmm. I just was thinking about this the other day. There was a time I went away with I was probably in fourth grade. I went away with a friend and I came back and my dad had found a bag of Doritos that I had hidden under my bed, which falls mm-hmm. right into line, crunchy and, yep. you know, high flavor. And yep. I remember being in trouble, being so embarrassed and so ashamed mm-hmm. that they had found it. And I don't even know if I was actually even aware of why I was doing it, but I knew that mm-hmm. like, that was how I was going to, that was how I was going to calm down.
You Absolutely. Knew that it made you feel better.
Absolutely. I mean, 100%. And that was just from a very, very early age. So I take an opportunity for those people who are in the group. If what Katie was just talking about, if that resonated with you and you feel like, oh my gosh, like she was talking about my childhood, and that was something that you can kind of relate to, I'm just going to ask you to put one word in the comments. I'm just going to ask you to put the word crunchy in the comments. Okay. Put the word crunchy in the comments, and I will know that kind of, we will know that that kind of resonated with you, that whole idea of one, not only the self-soothing, but the crunching is, that is so interesting. That self-regulating, that is, I'd never thought about that, but it, but it is, because you have the sound, and I still find it. I still find myself that way as well. I still find
chewing chips is and very rhythmic as like people who struggle with self-regulating. And there's a lot of people who are like neurodiverse and they struggle with self-regulating. It's not always linked to trauma, but you'll see that they do things that are regulating, you know, sometimes it's rocking. Chewing can be different. Chewing can be similar. It's rhythmic, it's crunching, and we are genetically predisposed to want to chew, because think of like, I mean, our ancestors needed to eat to survive, but I mean, our ancestors really needed that drive to go out, find the mammoth, a 3-day journey. You know, they didn't go down to the store and you know, they really needed that drive. And so they needed to go and like find the food. And so it is, you know, we're predisposed to want to chew and to eat.
Now, can you just give a brief little definition of a couple of things? One, regulating. So to regulate your behavior.
Thank you for doing that, because sometimes like I'm talking in my therapist brain. I got my therapist hat on. So please tell me if I say words and people are going, huh? So regulating is like something, and maybe an easier word for that would be like calming, self-soothing. When I say regulating, like, you know, when your anxiety is up or maybe you feel restless and you're sitting on the couch and you're just like, hands are wringing your hands and you just don't feel comfortable in your own skin. Sometimes that happens before people binge. Sometimes it just is kind of like ongoing throughout their day and their week. And so by regulating, I mean, think of like, you know, think of water in the ocean, just flatlining like this instead, you know, just kind of calming the waters. And and sometimes things that can make you feel race for some people, it's walking or exercise or doing anything that's rhythmic.
So I personally would love, because I think there are certain words that kind of get thrown out that like, it's like everybody just assumes that like, oh, well that's, it's this. So what is the actual definition of a binge? What is, when you have binged, what does that actually look like from a clinical standpoint?
Okay. So from a clinical standpoint, it's when you eat an increased amount of food more than, and I'm using hand quotes for people who can't see me, then more than what would be like normal. And I say it like that because I mean, what's normal for one person isn't normal for another, but we're, you know, so an increased amount of food than what will be considered normal. And then there's also a set of criteria that one has to meet in order to meet the diagnosis. And I tell people, I give a disclaimer, don't worry about the diagnosis. The diagnosis is for me and your insurance company to worry about. If you feel like you struggle with emotional eating or binge eating, that is a criteria enough for me. I'm not going to sit there and be like, well, you only checked off 5 of the 7. but things like feeling unable to stop, feeling powerless, and then the word shame is usually in there. Feeling shame after you've eaten. So sometimes people eat a lot, like maybe they go to a party and they eat a lot more than they would have ever months before, but they don't feel the shame. They're just like, oh, it was my birthday and I had, you know, extra few pieces of whatever. That wouldn't necessarily be considered a binge, because it isn't followed by like that shame. And then the, oh no, now I have to restrict to kind of like make up for it.
Okay. So it can be an individual can determine, because based upon what they previously have done, what their previous level of food is essentially, that's normal to them. A binge could be something to another person. It's like, well, that's just a regular meal for me. And to somebody else, it's like, oh no, that's way more food than I would ordinarily eat.
Yeah. I usually, when I'm working with really, when I'm talking to anyone, I tell people, don't worry about the diagnostic criteria, because those criteria is like a bunch of people, usually men, and I'm sorry, but it's true. It's people, and they're usually white, and it's very like Eurocentric of like what is considered normal in our culture of eating. Now that's very vague. So I tell people, if you feel shame after you've eaten XYZ, that's the more important to me than if you check off more boxes. But yes, but usually it's not like it has to be a set amount of calories per se. It's not like it has to be between a certain amount of calories. It's considered, I can't remember the exact word, but I want to say it's more than normal. Like, I'm using air quotes. I want to say like more than a normal person or like a would eat in the same amount of time. So it's an increased amount of food eaten in a shorter amount of time, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So within your, when somebody comes to see you and they have that, they're struggling with emotional eating, they're struggling with binging. For those people, I would love to have you share what your recommendations are when it comes to when does somebody need to seek help? I'm just going to let you take that. When does somebody need to seek help? And then what does it need to look like?
So this answer, I know this is both like frustrating because it's also vague. I feel like so many of my words are vague. It's very dependent on the person. There are a lot of people who say, look, I need help and I want it now. And then there are other people that are like, I'm not ready. And what we know as clinicians is that people have to be in a certain stage of change. They have to be in a stage where they're ready to change. And some people aren't. I have a lot of clients who lived for a long time in a very high conflict environment. You know, maybe they've immigrated from other countries where there's a lot of political turmoil and chaos going on, and their binging is what got them through it. Their binging is what allowed them to emotionally cope with the horrors that they were seeing and the horrors that they'd experienced. And so they were like, I'm not ready to give up this coping skill. Just the same as people who smoke cigarettes, people who drink alcohol, people who, you know, it's the same thing. It's like, I'm not ready to give this up right now. This is helping me get through. And so I tell people, like, don't, you know, necessarily, you know, worry about that as much as like, you know, the, you know, what it is that comes up for you in the feeling.
And what would you, we just had a comment in the comments in the group. What would you say to somebody who's talking about like almost being afraid to start eating because they're afraid they can't stop?
Yes. So a lot of times when I first start working with clients, and I like to tell people that this is usually, you know, this is done like over many, many sessions. So it's not like I could give you, and you all, I wish that there was like a magic button, a magic pill, a magic phrase that would make it stop. I wish too, because I think it would make it a lot easier. So it's like, there is no, you know, like magic thing to say. But first thing I want you to do is to validate that. And I want you to think about that part of you. Like, if you think of us as humans, as having different parts that make up who we are, and each part of us serves a purpose. So even the part of you that, you know, talk back to your spouse or you know, snapped at your spouse, or the part of you that raged at the road rage, the person who cut you off, like each part of you is serving a purpose, whether it's to protect you, whether it's decreased stress, things like that. So look at it from a point of curiosity. And there is no magic word. This is definitely something that would be worked on, you know, therapist and clinician or coach and client for a long time. Not a long time, but I mean for more than just a podcast length of time. Because I want you to validate that. I want you to say, yes, you know, there is a part of me that is scared to start eating because I'm afraid that I'm going to go way over the hump and stop, you know, way later than I wanted to. And so sometimes it's easier to just, you know, not eat, or to push the eating time back and back, or those types of things. And so I would say, first, validate it. And then second, I want you to have some curiosity and compassion for that part. Like, instead of being like, you know, because a lot of times what people do is they shame it. They're like, oh, that's horrible. Look what you've done. I can't believe you did it again. Like, you said that wouldn't happen again. And, you know, look at you. This is why you can't do X, Y, Z. This is why you aren't dating anyone. And that, when all those start, you've passed the point of being able to have compassion for that part. So instead, try, and I know it's hard, it's hard to make that switch, but try to be like, okay, what is that part of me telling me? Like, you know, is it trying to protect me from the shame? Is it trying to protect me from something? Because there's, it's trying to do something, even if it doesn't make sense. And even if it's only in the short term, that part of you is trying to protect you from something.
Right. Right. Mm-hmm. And I love what you said about accepting the accepting that part of you, because I think so much, and it's one of the things that I talk about all the time is we have to, and I'm sure you see the same thing, that when people want a change to happen, it's like we've almost been conditioned to want to hate that thing because that's supposed to be the motivation that's going to make us not be it. But that just keeps us in that cycle of just hating of just continuing to hate, and nothing good can come from hate. So we just, but that compassion piece is just, that's so hard. It's so hard because we so want that not to be a part of who we are.
And that's what the medical community wants too. You know, like the medical community is based on this set of criteria. Somewhere someone came up with like the idea of a BMI and the, you know, this and that, and it's all like insurance based. And so the medical community, everything from saying words like healthy weight or things like that, you know, it almost sets people up for that type of shame. Like, you know, like behaviors are reinforced, like, oh, okay. Yes. Like, you know, go ahead and skip the dinner or decrease the calories and things like that.
So from your standpoint, I know that there's a lot of talk of people, you know, a lot of people will say, well, it's, you know, if someone's binging, it's because of the type of food or the, you know, it's a craving for a certain type of food and they're eating something very specific. Is it really about the food or is it really about what's behind the emotion or the thoughts behind it?
It's really about the emotions and the thoughts behind it, because if it isn't, because like we as a society, like we've conditioned ourselves to like group food into like good or bad. You know, spinach is good, Brussels sprouts are good, but then Oreos and donuts are bad. You know, but what ends up happening is then we start, you know, saying, okay, I guess I can't have Oreos because they're bad. And for some people, in the beginning of your healing, and for some people, you know, I mean, healing is not like you just all of a sudden it's you healed and then it's gone. But it's definitely, you know, it's ebbs and flows and it's a journey. But, you know, for some people, they might just say like, hey, I probably can't have X food, you know, in my house just because I will kind of mindlessly eat more than Y food. You know, if a cookie, some people are more like, some people can have a bag of Doritos and they just have a couple and that's fine. That's not like their go-to food. And for other people, it's ice cream. For other people, it's Oreos. And so some people try to say that like, okay, I'm going to just not buy cookies or and sometimes, you know, that's something that we kind of work on of like exploring, you know, and being curious, like, why is it the cookies? What is it about it? And and sometimes it's just, you know, that they taste good. And it like, you know, the cortisol, all the hormones and everything, you know, the cortisol is going down. That stress hormone is going down when we eat the cookies or things like that.
Okay. And so when it comes to your kind of from the therapeutic side, the standpoint, when you're seeing somebody, you're addressing, I mean, all of these things will come up throughout the course of your treatment and their visits with you. And it's not a one and done. So y'all, let's just make sure we're clear on that.
I'm sorry, y'all. I know. I wish.
She'd love to have her little magic anti-binge wand. But if somebody is looking to or feeling like, God, I really want to talk to somebody about this, what do they need to look for? Because I know for me, when I was kind of looking for help with this, I just went to a general therapist. And as much as I learned a lot about myself, I did not feel that my food issues were directly addressed, just because, and I don't think it was by through any fault of theirs, other than they just, I don't think any of them were emotional. I just don't think they understood. I just don't think they understood it.
Absolutely.
So, so what would somebody look for if they were looking for someone to see, what would they need to be looking for when it comes to that, to get the help that they need?
That's an excellent question. Absolutely. So therapists, like, as much as we sometimes like to try to be, we're not the all-knowing, and we cannot know everything about every type of thing that brings people into therapy. So what I tell people to do is to look for a therapist who, I mean, in this day and age, most people have websites. And so if you go to their website or if they have a group practice or something like that, ideally they would have some type of thing listed showing their specialties. Look for a therapist who specializes in, and look for the keywords like emotional eating, binge eating disorder. Another thing I want you all to look for are, it's HAES, it's Health at Every Size, HAES.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that is everything from therapists to, if you go to like a gynecologist, PCP, neurologist, look for people who, you know, practice Health at Every Size. And what that means is they're not going to engage in as much of the, or engage in like that weight shaming. You know, like when you go to the doctor for a hangnail and they're saying, if you just lost weight, you know, you wouldn't have a broken finger. And it's like, nothing to do with why I'm here.
Right.
And there is a stigma around weight and any type of unhealthy relationship with food. We have a stereotype in our society that thin people are going to not engage in things like binging, or that heavier people aren't going to be engaging in things like restricting. And it's not right. And so look for a therapist who really understands that it's not about those stereotypes. Therapists who are not trained in food relationships or eating disorders and things like that can unknowingly set you back if you have any kind of trauma history. So I always tell people, look for a therapist who specializes. I mean, I specialize in working with family trauma. And because of that, I have like almost a subset of understanding of emotional eating and binge eating disorder, just because I see the link. Now I've had clients who've called me and said, oh, you know, I'm really engaging in like a lot of XYZ behavior. And I've said to, look, I really do not specialize in that. Let me give you a few names. So look for a therapist who's really open about what it is that they know and what it is that they don't know, and who they can look for, you know, and things like that. I think I actually wrote a blog on that, of like how to find a trauma-informed therapist. So someone who understands trauma and how that relates to eating behaviors.
Yeah. Yeah.
For those type of words.
Perfect. That is awesome. We have some questions here, and I wanted to address some of them. If I can, my eyesight is horrible today. Okay. So, we have a question just about, somebody was asking a question about, they would eat to be undesirable to men. Yes. They've kind of gotten, they've addressed that issue. They feel like they are now kind of open to dating. And so they feel like that's not the issue, mm-hmm. but they still can't stop overeating. And they still feel like they're still kind of going in that binge cycle. Yeah. And so what would be, it feels like she's kind of like, okay, well, I've gotten past this one thing, but why can't this yep. other piece be taken mm-hmm. care of?
So I there's a few elements to that. And so I'm going to kind of be kind of broad purposefully. So what happens is, you know, if something happens that's traumatic to us when we're a child, like I said before, children cannot compartmentalize. And I'm not saying that adults wouldn't be traumatized too, but children really internalize everything. And anyone who's worked with children, you know that everything is about them. And that's age appropriate. That's their development. And so if something happens to them, that's their fault. And so if a child is abused, whether sexually, emotionally, physically, all of the things, a child is then saying, okay, that's my fault. I'm defective. I did something to cause this. Mom comes home drunk and, you know, throws things. That's my fault. I didn't clean the house up. Even stuff that an adult might be like, I don't see the connection, but children, that's how their mind works. And so I did read that comment where the person said, you know, that they ate to make themselves undesirable. That is something that I've heard many people say, you know, and there's many different like schools of thought of that. I think that a lot of it has to do with, you know, your trauma history. And sometimes it's almost like you're re-punishing yourself. And I'm not saying you, meaning you who asked the question. I mean, many people have that experience. And sometimes that is what I find, that it's almost like you're reenacting the trauma and punishing yourself for what you feel like you did to cause it. It's almost like a punishing behavior. For other people, it might have nothing to do with that. And it might just be like, I, you know, had a dysregulated nervous system since childhood, and this is how I regulate. And I'm, you know, and I'm trying to self-soothe, because who doesn't want to be soothed? Who doesn't want to feel good when they're dysregulated, when they're anxious, when they're stressed, when things like that. So some of that has to do with it too. I hope that answers that. I know I kind of go off in different directions.
No. And I think, and the thing I think we keep coming back to, and I hope everybody is kind of connecting with this, because I did a podcast on this a few weeks ago, is it's that whole issue of shame. Yes. And shame is like, like the elephant in the room. It's like, it's just, there's the shame shawl, shawl on, and it's like, if we could just put that aside, things would be, I mean, we could come so much further if we just weren't consistently. And that's a learned behavior.
Oh, absolutely.
And a learned cycle.
And it is a cycle.
Yeah. Another really good question. Is the only way to recover from binge eating to be in therapy?
So I love that question. Thank you for asking that. So this, and it's funny because I say, thank you for asking it, and then I'm about to like not really answer. It depends on the person. I tell people that you know yourself. In the client is the expert in themselves. Mm-hmm. If your trauma history is coming up in a lot of different ways, you know, of course there's the binging and the emotional eating, but if you have trauma history that is really undealt with it, and you know that, then that is when I would really recommend therapy, because you're not gonna heal, unless you're really working on that trauma history. However, that being said, it is different for each person. Many people find a lot of, strength and therapeutic value in, lots of other ways that they get support. And I also do want to tell people that sometimes, you know, people will say, well, I must have trauma then, but I can't remember anything. And I do want to tell you, like, don't try to assume that you've had trauma. Just if you feel like you eat emotionally eat, or if you feel like you have binge eating disorder, don't try to like remember trauma, because what you can do is you can almost like kind of, you know, convince yourself that there must've been something, and it can kind of steer you down the wrong path. So you don't necessarily need therapy. However, it can help to help with a lot of the stuff that might be keeping your healing from happening and keeping your recovery from happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of the things I had talked about this on a coaching call in the membership, I have to do an annual exam for my recertification for my life coaching. And we did a lot of trauma informed. We did a whole section on trauma informed coaching. And one of the things that they were very, very specific about was, we talked about just what trauma is. And trauma can be something as simple as your parents getting a divorce. I mean, that can be trauma.
Depending on how it's handled.
For how it's handled and what it looks like. And they were just, you know, it was, you know, emotional neglect, physical neglect. Yes. I mean, there were nine different categories. So I know for me, I'm going to be honest and say that when I think of childhood trauma, I immediately think of either physical or sexual abuse. Those are the two areas that I automatically go to. And I was so glad that they went into detail and they really explained, because I was like, oh, okay, this makes a lot of sense. But one of the things they also talked about, and I think that this is something that Katie and I talked about this morning actually, was the idea that if you have not processed trauma, and I'm going to say especially physical or sexual abuse, if you have not processed that trauma, that needs to be done with a therapist. Like that is absolutely in the wheelhouse of a therapist who's going to take you through and is going to process that with you. If you haven't been seen for something like that, that is, and you feel that it is impacting your life and what's happening with you right now. That is a therapist is what they go to school for. That's what they're there for. And that would not be my area of expertise or my lane to be in. But Katie and I were talking about that this morning, in regards to just that there's absolutely a place for coaching. There's a place for therapy. Not everybody needs therapy. Not everybody needs coaching. I mean, it definitely can apply to lots of different people. And there's not just this cookie cutter, like, okay, you do this and you fall into this category. But that's where you really need to kind of examine what you're going through and where you feel like you need support.
Absolutely. And I definitely like to piggyback off of that. You know, I work with a lot of clients, from cultures that like aren't like our, you know, like more westernized view of therapy. And so maybe they grew up thinking, you know, hey, you know, therapy isn't something that, you know, is for me. They grew up with maybe, you know, just different views of like what healing is and different views of what trauma is. Like many cultures view trauma as just inevitable, whereas like our culture, we view it as something to kind of get over, which is you know, kind of a privileged viewpoint to look at it like that. But I also to piggyback on what you were saying, like childhood trauma encompasses like so much of like in the family, but also in our community. Like look at, you know, you can't even turn on the TV right now without seeing like community violence, like, you know, you know, and then there's, you know, I work with like a lot of clients of color who are like, you know, really impacted by things that they're seeing on TV, things that they're seeing and experiencing in their communities, especially, you know, here in New Orleans. You know, we have a lot of violence and things like that. And so, trauma is really like, it could be childhood trauma, could be anything, kind of like what you said. There's like all the different categories, and then there's, you know, I mean, there's community, there's what's, you know, if a client has had, you know, a horrific experience at school or things like that with bullying or school shootings, things like that, you know, a lot of that, you know, your brain codes all of that. And that's all encoded in your brain as like, oh, you know, scary thing. And it's kind of like the, you know, if you're out in the woods and you see a bear and you know, okay, I got to run from the bear. But then as soon as you get home, you're like, oh, phew, there's the bear. You know, a lot of people who've had childhood trauma, it's like the bear is in the kitchen. And the bear's in the kitchen maybe every weekend, or maybe just randomly on a Wednesday, or randomly in the middle of the night. You know, it's not like the brain can't shut that off.
Right.
Like, okay, I'm safe.
It's not a direct question, but there was, I'm just going to ask you this. We did not talk about this at all. So this is going to come out of left field. What's your feeling? Because I'm noticing a lot. I'm seeing this a lot with people that I know, that people that I'm have contact with. There's a lot of people doing hypnosis and kind of art, like RTT type of therapy. Somebody had mentioned that they were refused hypnosis and was told that they could not remember the trauma because their mind was not ready to remember it. Is that, I mean, if somebody, I mean, what is your take on hypnosis?
So it's hard because it's like I don't know enough about it to really. It's not something that is like most therapists. It's more like a subset. You know what I mean? Like people are kind of trained in that thing, like that area by themselves. You know, it's not something that like we learn about in school usually. In most, it is, so it's not something I necessarily feel comfortable saying whether I agree, disagree, anything like that. However, I would make sure that if you go to someone for hypnosis, please make sure that the person is licensed and trauma informed. And what I mean by that is like, you know, people can be trained in things like hypnosis. And I don't know, you know, what was said in the context of what was said, but if someone is telling you that you weren't ready to remember, if you didn't remember, there might be a chance of people, a lot happens before our brain is ready to retain memory. We know we have a lot of traumas that happen before it could be anything from like, our bottle didn't arrive fast enough. Like babies, that's a traumatic event for them. They, they start crying. Right. It's traumatic. Mm-hmm. Now, is the brain going to code that as like a big T trauma? Probably not, unless it's repeatedly denied the food and the nourishment that they need. So is there a chance that our brain or that your brain isn't remembering? Absolutely. But I would like look deeper into like, what it is the person trauma informed? Like, why do they think you're not ready to remember? What behaviors mm-hmm. or things have you said that made them think you have trauma that you're not remembering and not just like, if that makes sense.
Right. Yeah. Just ask more questions essentially. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's, it's also, I think it's something for all of us to remember, myself included, is we always, if we're going to be seeking any type of help from somebody, we mm-hmm. want to make sure that we are, that the person is reputable, that mm-hmm. they have had, appropriate training, that mm-hmm. you have spoken to other people who have, a number of people who have seen them. Also that they have some sort of license or certification. They have mm-hmm. some sort of backing. And I will tell you, and I'll be completely honest, that like life coaching is totally unregulated. Anyone could say they're a life coach.
Yeah, there's a lot of debate in the field about that, I know, even though I feel like there's a lot of value in coaching because I can't mm-hmm. see a client forever. After a while, I'm like, you need a coach. But there's a lot of value in it, but there's a lot of debate because of what you're saying. Yes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And so you really need to ask questions. I mean, and so when you're talking to somebody, you're interviewing them. Remember mm-hmm. that when you're, it could be the same thing with a therapist. I mean, you mm-hmm. want to connect with that person, but you also want to know that when things come up, that they know how to handle it. They know what to do. And especially in coaching, I would tell anybody if they were going to look for a coach, you also want to look for somebody who's going to recognize that if trauma comes up or something comes up that is not in their wheelhouse and that they should not be addressing, that they will say, oh, maybe this is something that you should, talk to a therapist about. Here, let me direct you to that person. Same way as you were saying, you would direct them to a therapist that was specializing. We always want to be very careful about who we share our information with, as well as making sure you protect yourself, because that in and of itself could be another form of trauma for you. And so it's really
important
to be really, really protective of yourself as well. Mm-hmm. Is there anything that you would, again, it's not like you can say like, and so you're, when you're at home, this is what you need to do, but
and
is there,
stuff, I mean, A, B, and C, yeah,
A, B, and C.
I wish you all.
Exactly. But is there anything, any pieces of advice that you could, other than the obvious of the not beating yourself up and not, and trying not to shame yourself?
So what I do want to say, and I want to kind of leave you all with this, because I know many of you all, even if you haven't asked, I know many of you all are thinking, what do I do when I binge? Or what do I do if I binge tonight, tomorrow, this weekend, whatever. So what I want you to do is instead of, because what happens is we almost like start to dread it. Like, oh no, Friday's coming up. A lot of people, mm-hmm. Friday is the binge day and evening is the binge day. Now, not for everyone, it's different for everyone, but for some reason, Fridays and evenings tend to be that day or that time. Mm-hmm. So I don't want you to start to be like, okay, here it comes and this is going to happen, and like the dread, come at it from the curiosity. Like, okay, why is this part coming up? Why is the binge coming? What is it trying to save me from? Am I stressed? A lot of us, especially because, most of my clients, have been from people who, like women, queer people, people of color, people who have to like give a lot during the week. Maybe they're moms and they have a lot of kids and they're the primary caregiver, they're giving all week. So come at it from like a point of curiosity of like, what is it that this part is coming in, and what is it that they're trying to help me with? And then what I want you to do is when the binge happens, when you're done and you have those thoughts where you're like, I did it again. And this time I promised I wouldn't, this time I need to get help. When those thoughts start coming, what I want you to do is I want you to stand up and just take a couple sips of water and like kind of move around the room. And it's not about calories. It's not about burning it off. It's not about that. It's about like moving your body. Stand up. A lot of people binge on the couch or in bed. or in the bathtub, things like that where you're sitting. Stand up, have a few cups, a few sips of water, move your body, and just be like, okay, it happened. I'm gonna, you know, if you feel like taking a walk and you want to do that, you know, go, sometimes even 2 or 3 minutes of moving your body will help like decrease some of that shame.
Okay. So they just kind of almost get in touch with their bodies.
Just get in touch. Yeah, just get in touch with it. Just get in touch with like, have some water, you know, move around. And it's not about, it's just kind of helping with, you know, the decreasing the shame. You know, my body, I'm going to take care of my body, because it sends the message that I'm going to continue to take care of my body instead of that shame coming in. And then what happens when the shame comes in, it's like, we almost punish our bodies. Well, now I'm going to restrict you. Now you're not going to be able to have breakfast. Yeah. And now you're not going to have this. So no. It almost treat it like the little child within you, you know, what are they? Some water, some comfort, a soft blanket.
Right. Okay. And is there, cause we just got a question. Is there anything that anyone can do beforehand, before when they feel it coming on?
So this one, it's a hard one. It's case by case, because the thing is like, if one person, you know, what ends up happening is like, you almost shame yourself by trying to think of what to do to prevent it. Yeah. Because then it's like, then you'll say, okay, if you put off meals for X amount of time, or if you try to distract yourself, then what ends up happening is then the binge is sometimes bigger than it would have been before, versus like just embracing and having like, okay, this is this part of me that's here for a reason, and it's making me feel better. Even if just for a little while, even if in the long term, this isn't making me feel better, this part of me is right now here for this reason. Mm-hmm. And so now it's different for each person. And so it's so hard in things like this to like give advice that applies to people, because I never want someone to feel like they're going to do something that's going to, you know, cause them more shame or damage or anything like that. So
absolutely,
that's one tip that works for some clients, but I, you know, usually it's like an individualized plan.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Something that has to be worked out through, through a process. Again, no one and done.
Yeah.
All right. So is there anybody who's listening, whether they're here in the group, if there's somebody who listens to the podcast, somebody wants to get in contact with you, how do they find Katie?
So I would like people to just go to my website, and usually everything is there. I have everything from you know my book, my email, everything is there. You can read a lot of my articles in Psychology Today and stuff like that are all on my website. So it's kind of like one, you know, one-stop shopping. My name is spelled weird. Thanks, Mom. So so like, I guess if I could type it out to you, or if you want to type it, it's my full legal name. Is there a chat?
Actually, Kathy, if you can be on the ready for this, and you can also spell it out, because Kathy's
okay. So I'm gonna put it in, then I'm gonna spell it out, because it always gets people. Okay, okay. www. And my name is Caitlin Gillis. So KAYTLYNGILLISLCSW. So Caitlin Gillis, licensed clinical social worker. Another thing you can do is just Google Katie Gillis, and it should be like the first or second thing that pops up.
And Katie is KAYTEE. Yes.
Which is usually easier to pronounce than Katie.
That's good. Oh yeah, she did. As a former teacher who would read names off of the roll list, and I'd be like, I'm sorry, I'm going to butcher this one.
Yeah.
Oh, she looked it up and she got your website up in the comments. Yay.
Oh, cool. Thank you.
I knew you'd come through, Kathy. Thank you. and I'll put it in the show notes as well. So, if you want to, you know, learn anything more about Katie and you want to connect with her, do you see people on Zoom?
I do. However, people have to be in Louisiana, because the way that my licensing works is that it has to be in Louisiana. And I do some relationship trauma coaching. So for people who have had, you know, traumatic families or traumatic relationships, and that is impacting their life, I do some of that coaching as well. But anything therapy, stuff like that is usually you have to be like, you have to be in Louisiana, excuse me. I do offer a lot of, you know, I have a lot of articles and things like that, that I post on my website and stuff that for, you know, for trauma survivors and people, you know, I offer a lot of like, you know, 5 steps for this, 3 steps for that, to give people like support in that area.
All right. So y'all get on there and blow up her website, and let's get those articles and be reading them. Well, Katie, thank you so much. I can't tell you how I feel like you just gave so much really valuable information, and really, it makes me feel really, I'm so happy that, again, the basis really is about looking mm-hmm. inside and looking, yeah. you know, and how you're feeling about yourself mm-hmm. and the shame piece, and really letting mm-hmm. that go, and really taking those steps to really, you know, kind of really understand yourself a lot yeah. better. And, mm-hmm. And I think that's something that we all continually need to be doing, that, whether it's, you know, whether binge eating is an issue yes. or something else. It's like, you know, self-exploration is just so important. And we all, you know, we never stop learning, we never stop growing. So, yeah, thank you so much for that excellent example of that. And y'all go buy her book. We got Invisible Bruises. And then we have let me get it right. It's Not High Conflict, It's Post-Separation Abuse. And that's yes. coming out this month. When will that be released?
So it's actually supposed to be released hopefully next week. We're kind of in the final stages of like, you know, what cover do we want to have, that kind of thing. Everything is at the end. So
yeah.
So yes. Yes.
And it'll be available on Amazon?
It will be available on Amazon. Yes.
And they can find Invisible Bruises on Amazon as well.
Yep. Invisible Bruises. There's a link on my website, but I tell people it just go on Amazon. It's easier. Invisible Bruises. There's another book by that name it's kind of a similar, in a story, but Invisible Bruises with my name, with Caitlin yeah. Gillis, and it's about domestic violence.
Excellent. All right. Well, wonderful. And hold on, stay on Zoom for a minute. All right, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, everyone.
And Katie, thank you for being here. And y'all have a great week. And we will see you all next week on the podcast, same time, same place. So thank you so much, and have a wonderful, wonderful week. All right. Take care, y'all. Bye.
Thanks for listening to today's podcast. To begin your journey towards losing your weight and managing your emotional eating, sign up for my free course, Food Freedom. Go to www.KristinJonesCoaching.com and click on the link for the free course.